I am sitting across the table from one of my favorite people.
You mean me?
Yeah, no. But your favorite, too.
Yeah, I just thought I'd be clear on that. So, all
right. I got to be nice to him for at least one more day. We have Matt Thurber, who says he has the best job in the world reporting on aviation for Business Jet Traveler and its sister publication, Aviation International News. In addition to working as an aircraft mechanic on everything from Piper Cubs to turboprops, Matt has been a pilot for an aircraft owner executive, right? So you were a corporate pilot and a flight instructor. But I happen to know that you're having a lot of fun flying for Aviation International News and writing about it.
Absolutely. It's a terrific job. I'm really lucky, and I do get to have a lot of fun and fly a lot of different airplanes.
Yeah, well, see, that's the really cool part of the job.
Yeah, and you got to go to Gulfstream School.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
He's a...
How many type ratings do you have now?
Two type ratings, the Citation 500 and now the Gulfstream G550.
Sweet.
Which includes a G450 and G5.
Okay. I'm waiting to see the Embraer type ratings.
I would love to add one of those, too.
Oh, come on. We got to know somebody who knows somebody, right?
That's right.
Anyhow, all that learning, and my feeling is that you've got a lot of opinions about training. And in particular, we were talking the other day about avionics training.
Absolutely. What I think we've seen as an industry is that technology is advancing so quickly, avionics designers are throwing a bunch of stuff into the mix and saying, wow, we could do this, we could do this, we could do this, let's do it. And it doesn't cost that much more to add all this stuff. But the problem is, in some cases, it puts a new burden on the pilot.
Well, what I found is there's 1,000 ways to skin that cat. That's what I like to say. I look at my GPS and I could do it this way, or I could do it that way, or I could do it this way. And when it comes time to teach people, that becomes a problem sometimes.
They don't know where to start.
Absolutely.
And what good does are some of those features if they're only cool, but they're not really helpful to most of the users?
Sure. I mean, there's a dichotomy right now where I talk to some pilots, oh, I never use synthetic vision. Who needs synthetic vision? Blah, blah, blah. It's unnecessary.
Really? In California?
All over the place. But I think it's a fabulous situational awareness tool, and I use it as much as I can.
I do, too. I particularly like the way traffic displays on the synthetic vision these days, because it really gives me a very clear idea of where to look, even more so than the 2D.
Absolutely.
But, you know, you did have a good... I read your post the other day about, you know, do you need a PhD to operate some of the electronics these days? And I have felt that with certainly airplanes I've flown, and I know students that I work with say exactly that. How do we get to the avionics people and say, look, could you maybe just put in the really good stuff that's useful and not
right.
all the cool stuff?
Well, maybe there should be layers of utility.
There you go, layers.
Start
I like
at
that.
A basic layer when you're first learning the system and then add other layers as you go along. But the problem is everything is so integrated, it all works together.
Yeah, I agree with you. I find that I'm doing a lot of flight reviews and instrument proficiency checks, and people can't get past Direct 2. And so, you know, they're getting a clearance and they're just direct two. And that's really not what the machine was meant to do.
No, absolutely. And I found that in my training, especially the recent Gulfstream training, they're very, very big on, look, you got to enter the flight plan.
Yeah.
And you've got to do it the proper sequence and set it up.
And then check it.
And then check it. Yeah, don't just put in a SID or a STAR and not make sure you've got all the altitude restrictions.
That's absolutely critical. Even on my old-fashioned, I still fly with a Garmin 300 XL as my approach certified GPS. And this is a 90s technology. But here's the deal. Every time I put an approach in, I have to make sure that I've put it from the proper initial approach fix, and that all the rest of the fixes are in there, and that they match up with what else I've got. And I don't, I tell you, that's my pet peeve.
Well, here's a question I think we need to ask as an industry is, do we want to have all of this capability? And if so, how are we going to help pilots deal with it? I mean, shouldn't the application of technology result in making pilots' jobs easier? And if so, we would see a reduction in the training time at, you know, some of these type rating courses, for example.
We're certainly not seeing that now. But, you know, I sat in an airplane cockpit this morning that did some interesting things. It has a very unique avionics package that we'll probably never see in another airplane like it. I'll keep it to that in terms of, I'm not going to reveal who it is. But it is a fabulous package. And when I was going through things, I was seeing where it automated so many things that the pilot used to have to calculate himself or herself. And all I had to do was the trigger for it, like tell it what airport I wanted to go from one point to the other. And it calculated pressurization. It threw in, you know, I told it what the passengers weighed and what the bags were. It did the weight and balance. It did the runway calculations, you know, things like that.
That's a great example of proper use of technology, because that does make the pilot's job easier. And not only that, a lot of pilots will just, they've flown an airplane for a long time. They're not going to do a weight and balance every time. This kind of forces you into good practices, right? And that's important for single pilot operation.
Absolutely. It even set the bugs. So once all those calculations were made, I said, okay, so I would go over here and set the airspeed bugs and the... No, that's done.
Makes it
you
simple.
You just need to check it. You just need to check it.
But that's an important part, the being able to check it, because if you've grown up learning to fly in some of these automated airplanes and the instructor says, well, you know, you can just... It does this for you, it does that for you. And I can show you how to do the calculations later. And somebody runs through and says, yeah, but I don't really need to know it because the airplane's going to do it for me automatically.
Oh, that's dangerous.
And then something breaks, because we know it's going to break. There is that blue screen of death that Microsoft was famous for, and everything breaks.
We really don't want our avionics to be running on such a fragile package. I think the software and the hardware has to be much more robust.
Well, yes,
every pilot should know, for example, that even if the system automatically calculates VREF, if it's not around 1.3 stall speed,
it's not right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
You're
right.
Absolutely right. And that goes back to the basics, all the way back to the kind of teaching that we do right now. Are we teaching flying first?
Correct.
And operating systems second? I don't know that we are. I don't know we're doing enough of it these days.
I had a guy yesterday at the proficiency center that I was flying with, and we were talking about a high altitude airport. And I said, how do you calculate density altitude? And he said, well, I reach up and I flip the switch on the panel and it does it for me. And I said, but do you know the math behind it? And he went, I think I did, but I don't need it. I said, yeah, okay. But that's exactly the kind of point, is that, you know, we're old enough that we can fall back on it and say, oh yeah, 1.3 V, that's not right. And we do that so quickly, but new pilots aren't taught the same way.
Well,
and their brains
I hear what you're saying. I try to take as much math out of it as I possibly can. So I try to go with round things. So density altitude, if it's above 60 degrees, you know, and you're at altitude, you should just throw another 1,500 to 2,000 right on top
sure.
of it.
But
you
if you talk about training, how do you show them
The
effects
do.
Of density altitude, or how do you show a new pilot what it means to actually fly into clouds accidentally?
Well, the effects of density altitude can be demonstrated even on a cool day.
Yeah, by pulling the power back.
That's exactly right, and saying, now try to take off. You know?
And that's where the sims come in, too.
Absolutely.
A sim. You can see a simulator and pretend that it's 1,200 overcast, and you get a little close to the bases, and then suddenly the ground has disappeared.
Yeah, I think simulators are incredible tools. And one problem I see is that a simulator will be at a school and all the instructors will say, we never use that.
I agree with you. It's as difficult to get the instructors who are trying to build some time into the flight sims as it is to get the students into the flight sims.
Yeah.
Sure, and then, of course, you have, another PPC example from yesterday. I had a guy that was 27 hours into his instrument rating. He'd never been in the clouds, ever.
Yikes.
And I said, I just found that hard to believe, but then that's the instructor, too. I don't know how proficient they are.
That's a good point.
But, where are people going to be able to read more Matt Thurber opinions about everything?
Well, you can go to our magazine's website. It's www.ainonline.com. That stands for Aviation International News. And you can read not only my stuff, but all my fabulous colleagues. And
you have colleagues there?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. He's not a one-man band.
We have a great team, and we have a lot of fun covering this industry.
Oh, that's fabulous. Matt Thurber from Aviation International News, thank you so much for taking the time to come into EAA Radio today and talk with us.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Rob. It's been a pleasure.
It has been fun.